Hello and welcome to the Fire Podcast. I'm Ryan Rhodes, and on today's episode, the formative power of music and beauty, creating a vision that leads a culture, but what's the most important thing in the midst of a move of God? Jasmine is a worshiper, an influential voice to our generation, and a mother to many artists in need of affirmation and direction. She serves as the executive pastor over the experience department at Mercy Culture, a church in Fort Worth, Texas, that has been experiencing miraculous growth and community impact. In addition, she leads Axel Creative Co., a housed vision of Mercy Culture that equips and empowers kingdom creatives. From leading worship on a stage to singing love songs in a bar, her relationship with Holy Spirit is tangible and her passion for Jesus contagious. This episode is going to rock you. Some of you know this, some of you may not, but Jasmine Tate was one of the key people in my life around the time that I got saved. She was one of the people that was spending their lunch break in high school praying for certain people to get saved. I was one of those people, and I'm incredibly thankful for that. She's helped disciple me at different points in my life. I've watched her worship transform. I watched her supernaturally learn how to play guitar and sing and songwrite. She's seen multiple people raised from the dead. I've seen miracles with her. And all that's beautiful. But I think the thing that's going to capture your heart the most is just how much she loves Jesus. Especially in the second half of this podcast, you just begin to hear the raw just love for Jesus. And since our conversation did go a bit long, this has been split into two parts. You're currently listening to part one, and part two will be released a week after this, which will be on April the 12th. So be looking out for part two. That gives you a week to listen to this one, and I think you're really going to love this. Please share this with your friends, your family, on social media, all of those things. Follow, subscribe, do all the social media things. It helps us come up higher in the search results. Also, if you've been touched by this podcast or this ministry, would you please consider giving a one-time or monthly gift? Helping support the podcast helps us grow what we're doing here, reach more people. It gets reinvested back into Fire as a ministry, and that is super helpful. If you'd like to do that, you can go to firemovement.com/support. Once again, that's firemovement.com/support. There you can choose to give a one-time or monthly gift. And we appreciate all that. Thank you. Also, thank you for your prayers and your support, your feedback. All of it's been valuable. And now we are going to have a quick sponsor segment, and then we will jump into our podcast. Religion loves Jesus the teacher. Is even okay with Jesus the prophet. Religion is not okay with Jesus the breaker of bondage, the transformer of hearts, the savior of nations. Because the real Jesus is the anointed one. He doesn't just have good teachings. He is the breaker of bondage. He will transform you. But you got to go after knowing him more. He's worth it. He's worth your time. He's worth your life. And there's nothing, this city, this nation, the nations of the world are not going to be transformed by a satisfied people. They're going to be transformed by lovesick warriors. Because if he's for us, who can be against us? If the king of the universe and all of his goodness, all of his backing, if all of heaven is for you, is standing behind you, supporting you, how could anything succeed against you? How could you fail? We could change the world. That's not just a fun phrase. If you'll give your life to this thing, to the real thing, if you'll find the real Jesus, the one who burns with eyes of fire, if you'll get a real hunger in your belly and you don't let anything else stop you, and if you align yourself with who you are as a son or daughter of God, there is nothing that can stop you.
This is the Fire Podcast.
Well, we're here today. I've got my co-host Vince with me again.
Hello.
Vince Kinnaraj.
Everybody. Yep.
I think that's the most you've said in the intro so
that's
far.
True. I think I usually say yo, yo, yo. And I recognize that every time.
And our guest on the show today is Jasmine Tate, who you heard a little bit about in the intro. Jasmine, thanks for being on with us.
Yo, yo, yo. Took your line, Vince. I'm good.
It fits you well. It fits you well, Jasmine.
It's awesome. So we are, I think the good way to start off for the people that I know that have been on the show, we've just kind of talked about how we even know each other. So I figured this would be a good time to publicly talk about how I trained you in basketball.
Why did I literally know that's what you were going to say?
Ryan told me he's a star point guard.
That was only Ryan in college.
Was the star point guard?
That's what he said.
Got it.
I'm totally kidding. I'm totally kidding. I recognize that most people can't recognize my facial expressions here. So.
I was about to call for a fact check straight up.
Fact checkers are in my favor. Basketball, it's my favorite sport. I like the way they, they dribble up and down the court. Some people get that. Anyways.
But, well.
Yeah. I mean, I helped improve your form for your jump shot.
Oh my gosh.
And you got crossed over so many times that you began to learn to recognize, which way somebody's probably going to go and all
you
that.
You taught me everything I know. Thank you for your contribution to my life.
Yo, for real though, did you play basketball, Jasmine?
I did.
All right.
Ryan, on the other hand. But I did play basketball. And that is not how we met. But we might have encountered each other on a basketball court a few times.
Nice.
Yeah. So, Jasmine, where did you play? Where did you play basketball?
I mean, I played in middle school, high school, all that stuff, and then played in college in Pittsburgh. So was a point guard in college ball, little school out in Pittsburgh. Robert Morris University. Woo-woo. Woo-woo-woo.
Nice. Cool. But how did you guys meet?
Vince, how did you guys actually meet?
On the court.
That's definitely not where it happened. I think, Ryan, if I go all the way back, you can help me here. I'm pretty sure we actually played on the same Little League baseball team. I think it was like
what?
You and John Asenita.
Yo, my eyebrows
Craig,
just went up.
And me. I was the only girl. And I think there's these two guys, Kyle and Sean, I think, and their dad was the coach. I can't think of his last name right now. But they're like a Hispanic family. And there was two sons. Brandon and Sean were their first names. Brandon Hantz, Mr. Hantz was his name, Hantz. That was our Little League coach name. I'm pretty sure we were on the same baseball team. But then we ended
That's
up,
wild.
That was like fifth grade, I think. And then sixth grade, we actually ended up in school together.
I didn't play baseball in fifth grade.
You did it? Are you sure?
I was much younger because I didn't end up liking baseball. So maybe you were on with Craig and Jonna.
Maybe it was just Craig and Jonna. So then in that case, all of that needs to be fact checked. And me and Ryan just met in school in sixth grade. Which, were you in Mr. Weaver's or Miss Hayes' class?
Miss Hayes'.
So we were in the same sixth grade class.
And I've forgiven her, but Miss Hayes had us do this thing where she had everyone, gave us a list of everyone in our class. And we had to write something good about every single person in our class. And Jasmine's was something, and then she gave it to us when we graduated, like Miss Hayes did, like awesome teacher. She gave it to us at the end, like gave us different things we did that she kept all those years, and she did that with every class. Well, anyways, Jasmine's was like something like, keep working on basketball, someday you'll be good. Some kind of backhanded compliment. I'm like, really?
Oh, it's because I knew you were going to grow up to be like this regarding basketball.
Yeah. So anyways, I got one of those from Brian Williams. I doubt he'll ever hear this, but there was the one video that got posted on Instagram stories for like, the 24 hours or whatever. And I got so many comments. I don't know if you guys ever saw that. It was me backing down somebody and we were just messing around out in a thing. And I did like just a little turnaround, fader and made it. And it was like pretty standard. I was moving super slow. and Brian Williams, he DMs me. He said, you look like you used to be good. But I got so many people who was like, I didn't know you ball and all this stuff. And I was like, racism.
Right. Racism. Oh my gosh. Well, that's how we met, was playing yeah. together in sixth grade.
That's pretty amazing. And, I mean, that was like, go ahead.
We weren't really like we weren't cool yet, though. I don't feel like we were really cool until
speak for yourself.
Middle school. Like, we were cool, but we weren't like closer. Like, I don't feel like we got
cool. Oh, you mean like cool, like school. Friends cool. I thought yeah. you were talking about like social status.
No. I'm talking about relationally. Where we like, I don't think we were
that's
like
that's a sore
friends.
Spot, man, right now.
I don't think we were friends until we got into more of the middle school, early high school space for yeah. real.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, we have two different like stories. So.
That's probably true, because it wasn't until really Mr. Wilson's class mm-hmm. and like seventh grade and Messenger Club and yeah. all that.
Yeah.
So our school.
Wait,
or
did
our,
you say Messenger?
Yeah. So do you remember POD?
Yeah.
Like, I am the messenger.
Uh huh.
Messenger of God. Well,
so
we
had a club.
We had a teacher who was way beyond his years and even pay grade, like. Just with the way he would think and stuff, he was being way underpaid, should have been doing something else somewhere else. But he was our teacher and he was amazing. And that man taught us so much and just thought he did things so out of the box. We could probably tell stories. I actually would like to do that because I don't think people know all the stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Wait, what was his name? What was this guy's name?
Matthew Wilson.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most basic name. So if people try to look him up, they'd have to know where we went to school. But, he was awesome. He was obsessed with POD, and so he started the Messenger Club, and it was like a social club that was also there to like raise up leaders, essentially. I don't know that he would use that exact language, but like he formed tribes, different tribes, and there were leaders of those tribes, and those tribes were like 7th to 12th graders all mixed together. And so he had this like weird middle school and high school mixed together. Jasmine and I were both leaders of that, of our own tribes and stuff, where we're leading 12th graders, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. But he would do things to like test us. Like he would like, you know, he trained us to like take care of our school, clean up. Like if you see trash, you clean it up, you intervene and stuff, like those sorts of things. And then he would like have people be his lookouts and they would like plant trash and like, you know, you'd
and, you and get it was points. Like
a yeah, it'd be a point system and stuff. But it was just genius. Yeah. I don't know. I'm talking. You have any thoughts on that, Jasmine?
Like, no, I mean it was life changing. Like, it's the kind of thing
life changing.
Absolutely, it's,
yeah.
Wow. It's the kind of thing that when you're young, you know it's cool and that it's significant, but like you don't really get it yet. Like now that I've gotten older, I look back on it and I'm like, that he changed our lives.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And,
I mean, I feel God on that. I'm just candidly, like, I feel God on that. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a game changer. There's so many leadership things even now. I mean, honestly, it was kind of funny you brought him up, Ryan. Like, I bring him up all the time in different leadership lessons that I learned from that season of life and stuff. And I don't think we could have put language or articulated that we were being like raised up as leaders. Mm-hmm. Even arguably as spiritual leaders, like there was things that we learned spiritually, even in that space, that were really significant. So shout outs to Mr. Wilson.
Yeah. I mean, he would do stuff like not just that. Like I remember one time he came to class and he was like a silent class. I think on the board it said like no noise, no talking, no anything. And he came in and taught a whole class just by writing and pointing to stuff and like acting stuff out. But he was like, he would constantly train us to not be limited by things and to think outside the box. And like he would play rock music during a test because he's like, mm-hmm. or we'd have a reading assignment and there's rock music playing. And because he's like, you can't be in the place where you can't pay attention to something because of other external circumstances. Or like he really liked The Apprentice. And, you know, and so he did his own version of Donald Trump's The Apprentice, like the TV show. And he'd give us like business scenarios and we'd have teams and we'd have to come back and like present something and he would just tear them apart. And it was like, but it was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he even like, I remember he would paint his room, his classroom, different colors. And
At a school?
Like, yeah, he would paint it different colors. And then we'd come in and kind of, he'd play a different style of music with a different paint color. And he'd come in and then, like, teach us, like, what did you feel when you came in? And he'd, like, teach us the way that music actually affected the way that we felt. And that the color of the room affected the way that we felt. And, like, we'd have, like, songs that he'd, like, take the lyrics out and let the music. Like, I tell people this all the time as a, like, a, as a songwriter, to this day, this is a part of why I write songs the way I write songs, is that he would take songs, take the lyrics off of them, like an instrumental version of a song, and make us listen to it and ask us to tell us what the music was saying in the song without the lyrics, and then give us the lyrics separately and say, like, break down what does this song mean, the lyrics, like, what do the words say? And then he'd basically be like, do they go together? Is the, are the lyrics telling the same story of the music? And so, like, to this day, I write, that's part of how I write music, is the Lord gives me chords. And then I'm asking the Lord, what are the words to articulate what he's saying through the chords that he gave me? But, like, it, that changed my life and how I listen to music. Like, I remember him coming in and being like, did you know that Happy Birthday was secular? Like, he was, like, setting this fear of, like, religious chains when we were little. Like, he's like, Happy Birthday is a secular song. Like, so it can't be about secular music or not. Like, that can't be how you live as a Christian. Like, it, you actually have to know what the song is saying and what the spirit behind it is. And then, like, all that kind of stuff. Stuff that you just don't typically hear in middle school.
And,
like,
this was when? This was in your middle school years? Man, that's so wild. I'm like, I think I'm probably stuck on this a little bit because, you know, I have a almost 2 year old, and, like, these are the types of things, like, I'm teaching her that nobody taught me, that I'm, like, literally going through for the first time in my own life and, you know, teaching my daughter. And so to hear that this is coming out years ago as you guys were in middle school in Ohio. Like, it's just it's astounding to me, right? Because, like, you know, I went to a Catholic school and then I went to a public school, and nobody taught me anything of that, anywhere even close to any of that. And you know, the extent of leadership and, you know, having leadership instilled in, you know, I just look at middle school, but, like, that was, like, reserved for the honor students, right? Like, or, like, that was reserved for certain types of people. But it sounds like this was more like, hey, these are the principles. Let's run with them.
Yeah, I mean, it was available to, I mean, honestly, he was our history teacher 1 year, a Bible teacher another year, and I think a music appreciation teacher another year. I don't know if you had all three of those too, Ryan. But, like, I remember coming into Bible class, even, I mean, really all of them, you kind of think you know what you're going to learn about. And, like, Bible class, history, he's just teaching us about life and, like concepts that, just things that you wouldn't ever think that you'd get to learn in a history class or a Bible class, that should be taught in history classes and in Bible classes. So it was, it's a, I'm very thankful for Mr. Wilson.
You guys had a real life Mr. Feeney.
Well, okay,
we all had nicknames too, remember that, Ryan?
What was yours?
Tater tot. That's how,
mine was the American Dream, because of Dusty Rhodes the wrestler. Dusty Rhodes the American Dream. Nick Hawthorne's was Crazy Legs. I remember that.
Who was his friend? I can't stop thinking of Frieder. That's his friend though. Fred Reader.
But he really was, like, a real life Mr. Feeney, because Mr. Feeney would do things that would almost, like, I don't know if I'm allowed saying this, but it's my podcast, but he could piss people off. And he would piss his students off to get them to a certain result on purpose. And I remember, like, even Mr. Wilson at the time, I was so mad at him, but I wanted to run for class president. You had to have a teacher recommendation to do it. And in my recommendation, he said he'd be a good number two. Like, that was his recommendation for me, is he wouldn't be a good president. He'd be a good vice president. And I had such a screw you rise up in me. And I end up winning. But, like, that's when leadership started really, the stuff he did with us early on, and then that was freshman year, you know, that's the stuff that really stirred me for leadership. And most of what I did with Fire in Columbus came out of those years. And it was just stuff I was taking and like, just like, mm-hmm. okay, guys, we're going to learn this lesson now. Like,
yeah.
And that's how I raised up leaders and stuff, was out of that mentality.
Do you remember, what was it called? Like Leaven Day. And it was the day where everything went to what he could be as a teacher. He would paint all the walls white, not play music, and wouldn't do anything fun. It was one day a year that I think was called like Leaven Day or something. You don't remember that?
No.
It was like my least favorite day of the year every year. And I was just, I like just would be what afraid of that day coming.
Tell me more about it.
It was him showing like don't take for granted what you have access to.
Oh my gosh.
So he basically
this is gonna make me cry, guys.
He'd take a day and be like a normal teacher. Yeah. Like no fun. He painted the wall, like everything was back to normal. And
wow.
And then at some point he would kind of teach like this is what you're supposed to get. That this is what you have access to. Like don't take advantage of what you get when you come into this class.
Wow.
Because his class was like at the end of a hallway. He basically could do whatever he wanted to at the end of a hallway. He was making mm-hmm. the administration and everybody, all the teachers mad too, because he was just doing stuff. Like mm-hmm. he would do beach days. We're not going to talk about beach days. We can do
that. Yeah. Wow. I remember, I just keep having this thought, but so I'm going to share it. One of the things he did with music, like talking about teaching us about music and how much music can affect things, he played, he would do stuff that I'm actually surprised parents didn't go after him a lot, like stuff yes. that, because he was honest enough to say, you know, these middle schoolers are watching MTV, VH1, like they're being discipled by media right now, and Christian parents especially you know, want to shield their kids from everything and act like their kids aren't hearing any other music but K-Love kind real. Of music and yeah. that kind of thing. And I remember he played Boys in the Hood, the scene where I don't remember the names, but it's is that Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character that's like running away, the car pulls up and they pull out like a guy's leaning out of a car yeah. with a sawed-off shotgun, and uh-huh. he turns and he's running as hard as he can, and he gets shot, and you see the shotgun tear through his body and stuff, and he falls to the ground. Well, he plays it. I think he played it on mute the first time. He's like, just see how this makes you feel, and then I think then he played it with the sound, and then he played it with like in the club. Find me in the club, you know, and it completely changed the scene to where you're like actually kind of vibing with this guy getting shot and just murdered on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And he was showing like how much just a change in the music, a change in what you're hearing affects what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And it's just like those kinds of lessons. It made me like, to this day, I listen to the lyrics of what's yes. being played.
Can't unlisten. Before that.
Yeah. You can't, yeah. You're always yeah. on and like hearing it. And then you're like, whoa, that's in that song. Like mm-hmm. what, you know, that's dark or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's all thanks to him and like thinking outside the box like that.
Yeah, man, that's aww, brilliant.
Mr. Wilson.
Yeah. So, with all that to say, like you guys go way back. You guys go way back and you guys have walked through like a lot of stuff together. I think I want to yes. like, I don't know if you mind, Ryan, but I kind of want to stay on the music thing. Obviously, Jasmine, like for anybody that doesn't know you, they don't need to like, search too long to know that music is like a big, big, big part of your life. And I'm like thinking about this just in light of something happened earlier today. I heard Blink-182 like over and over again, just for whatever reason, everywhere I went, I just heard Blink-182. I forgot the song now, but the one portion of it is like, where are you? You know, how that comes out. And I like kept hearing that over. And today I was like in line. I forgot where I was going. I think it was at the coffee shop and, you know, we're driving and I heard somebody bump into this same song. And so I'm like, you know what, let me go and like put it on over my speakers. Right. And I put it on my speakers. And I remember the first time that I really got into that genre of music or that style of music was in middle school. And when I found out about Blink-182, like, I remember getting really depressed, you know, and listening to like Nirvana, listening to all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to highlight this because, like, literally today I'm like listening to this in the car, and I recognized that there were parts of my heart that were still like almost attached to some of those memories and some of those feelings that were stuff that I relived, right? Like from the eighth grade or whatever it was kind of season. And I was like, whoa, man, like I didn't even realize that that was still there, you know? And I'm listening to this and I'm like, gosh, how powerful is music? And what you guys are describing is like, well, shoot. This is a lot deeper than most people recognize. It's a lot deeper than most people will give credence to. I'd love, Jasmine, just like you're like 30,000 foot, like just go in. What's music to you?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a loaded question.
Yeah, I know.
What is music to you?
But like you think about it, right? Like right now, like in this climate, like what is music to you? What is it what you see today?
Yeah, I mean, music is so ridiculously powerful. And I think more powerful than we give it credit. I'm still just mind blown when I hear people say that they're not like influenced by what they listen to. you know, just still hearing people say that here and there. I'm just like, I just can't understand when people say that, because music is just incredibly powerful. And I lead a creative community out here full of singer songwriters and dancers and painters and visual artists and all these crazy awesome people. And we're always talking about what mimers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I tried to get Ryan to be a part of it. He denied me. That's fine. We'll talk about his past and miming later. Something we're always talking about is just how much people are discipled by music. And I know Ryan referred to that earlier. And I think we originally probably learned that from Pastor Wilson.
You kind of did.
Mr. Wilson, yeah. Yeah, from Mr. Wilson. But like when I was in middle school, probably why he was so impactful to me was because around the time that he came into my life, for whatever reason, I was obsessed with Eminem. Like, I mean, hey man, Eminem was, Detroit. He was accessible during that time. He was making really dope sounding music. But I was like obsessed with him. And the problem was my home life started falling. I was aware of my home life falling apart around that time of my life as well. So my home life was pretty crazy, but I became aware of how crazy it was when I was in middle school, like the, like, fifth, sixth, seventh grade is when my eyes were starting to open to like the brokenness of my family and my home. Okay. And so the mix of that revelation hitting me outside of, and it kind of, I wasn't really like on fire for Jesus in those few years there. And so the mix of the heaviness of what was happening in my home, me not really being on fire for Jesus, and then like Eminem basically discipling me through music, that became one of the darkest seasons of my life. I battled suicide during that time. I was depressed during that time. I was really popular during that time, but like broken, and like would go home and cry myself to sleep and be having bad thoughts about my family and my mom. And like, because I was listening to I'm Sorry, Mama, you know,
yeah.
Like that was what I was filling myself with. And Eminem was teaching me how to respond to the brokenness in my home. Yeah. He was discipling me, and there was no one else really in that space giving me instructions about how to respond to the brokenness. And so I'm personally passionate about music right now as an artist, because I think it's a space that has to be occupied by believers, by followers of Jesus. If we want to see generations discipled to Christ. Like we have to write songs that beyond just worship songs, you know, that that are discipling people and teaching them how to process brokenness and teaching them how to process heartbreak and divorce and families and forgiveness. And like, we have to tell all of those stories through music because somebody is. There's discipleship happening, and that, it is not just through music. I know we're talking about music right now, but like, that's happening through movies and TV shows and all kinds of stuff. And I'm starting to, my blood pressure is going up, so I'm gonna stop talking for a second. But you got me, you asked me a loaded question, man.
Do we need to call someone?
Maybe. potentially. Yeah.
Honestly, like, Jasmine, the reason that, like, I think that it was so a front of mind for me was everything that you were, like, alluding to with Mr. Wilson was, like, around music, how the colors, how the, all of these aspects, these senses, right? Like, helped you, he helped you, whether or not he called it as such, he helped you walk into a space and acknowledge that there was something deeper to what the eyes are seeing or what the ears are hearing. That there was a deeper spiritual connection point.
Yes.
And like, one of the things that I think about, and like, my wife is really gifted in like interior decorating, and man, some of the spaces that she puts together, people will walk in and like look at the space and they'll be like, I just feel peace here.
Yeah.
Right? It's stimulating, and it's stimulating to the point where you're having a spiritual experience. Myself, like, actually the first time that I went to Pecan Lodge, shout out Pecan Lodge, one of the best barbecue joints in the nation down in Dallas, I cried. Like, I straight up cried, and I felt Jesus in everything that I was eating. And it wasn't because there was anything like, you know, well, I'll back up. The reason that I was crying was because I felt the love, I felt the craft, I felt the depth of care that was coming through all the flavors at once. Right? And I had this like spiritual epiphany moment with Jesus where I was like, man, like, this is, someone was called, whether or not they acknowledge it, someone was called to make this meat.
Yes.
And someone was called to be a global, like a national influence at this level. And so for me, like, hearing you talk about music and this creative side, like, even coming into the conversation, like, you are at Mercy Culture, right? And you're talking about like the creative community and stuff like that. And like, the number one question on my mind for you today was, God, what is God doing at Mercy Culture? What is God doing in Fort Worth? What is God doing in the creative community through you, around you? Because I believe, just like personally, I believe that like, we're experiencing, like, I've said this before, but I believe that we're experiencing a renaissance. Like, I believe that what is coming out of COVID is a wave of people that are operating in stuff that we've never seen before. And I believe that that's coming through creatives. I believe that's coming through people that are thinking out of the box. They have to, right? So I'll let you kind of run. Hopefully you got a little time to think there.
Yeah. Well, you kind of asked three questions there. What's God doing in Fort Worth and Mercy Culture and the creative community? I mean, honestly, I'm a little I've been trying to process actually the last few days a lot about what the Lord is doing here. So Ryan and I grew up at the same church and have gotten to just see some cool moves of God, some cool moments in the Lord, cool things in the body of Christ. And we've gotten to see hard things too. Everybody has gotten to see both probably, but like we've gotten to see some beautiful moments is what I want to focus on. And I've never gotten to be a part of like, I've never been down to Brownsville or some of these really well-known revivals that have happened. But I've been a part in, involved in some beautiful moves of God. And I'm still trying to honestly wrap my mind, which may not be possible, I guess, potentially, but I'm still trying to wrap my mind around what's happening here. It's pretty crazy. But it doesn't feel familiar, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't, it just doesn't feel like, it just, it's like different, but it's like powerful and like potent. You know, Sean Fight was with us this weekend, and he said, he told a friend, a mutual friend of ours, that essentially that it was the most, like, it was the most powerful thing that he's been in a while, like, that he's actually gotten to, like, be in, so, some wording like that. I don't remember the phrase that he used. And just a few other people who have said that in coming, and I'm not saying that to whatever. I'm honestly, like, in a place where I'm trying to, like, perceive what is happening. Mm-hmm. We are in the midst of, and we're in the middle of COVID, a pandemic, national pandemic, and, or global pandemic, whatever you want to call it. And, like, it, again, I'm almost hesitant to even talk about it, 'cause I don't know the right language to put around. I'm still processing. Yeah. But our church, like, tripled, potentially quadrupled through the pandemic. And not just people has increased. Like, there has been a, this steady, like, it rise in the tangible presence of God there. Like, so it's like, while there's more people coming, there's like this, you know, it talks about in Ezekiel from ankle deep to knee deep to waist deep. Like, it feels like there's just this steady rise that's happening. And, and yeah, so every week we're all like, what, everybody, you know, everybody every week is just like, what's happening? And it isn't this like thing of, every week there's all these crazy testimonies of, like, people, blind eyes open, deaf ears. Like, there's not like this, like, this line of testimony service. People come up and share things. Like, I've been a part of those moments. I've been, like, been a part of the moments where people are just laid out in the spirit and rooms are shut down, you know. But there's this, like, there's this, just this weighty presence of God that is there, and a hunger. There's this beautiful corporate encounter, just the weighty presence of God every single week. And I don't know, I'm still like, I've been getting rocked by what's happening. There's the testimonies that are coming in, there's like, people are being given, buying properties, like, a lot. There's a lot of activity in the political sphere. One of our pastors is running for mayor, another guy is running for councilman. Just bit, like, businesses flourishing. 95% of our church members tithe, which the national average is 5%. But there's just like stuff like that. That's like odd. Like, you're like, it's just, it's interesting. We don't have room for our kids, 'cause there's like, the age group from 4 to 11 years old is the largest age group number that currently is in our church. And these kids are getting rocked. Like, they're having like real encounters with the Lord, and real, like, it's been, it's just crazy. And so, anyways. And so I, in the midst of that, I'm one of the pastors at the church, and I oversee the experience department, which is like all of the production and worship team and social media and basically anything creative. that happens in our house or the face of our church, as well as like the guest experience. So the parking lot and all of that. I'm the oversight of those departments, not necessarily the leaders of them. And but like specifically with the worship team and the creatives community, if you will, I've never seen such a, and I mean, you could say this about the whole church, but like, I've never seen such generosity, in a culture that is typically filled with competition and jealousy and striving. There's this beautiful collaboration and generosity where, I mean, people are giving away. I mean, somebody just personally, the Lord told them to give me something that's probably worth $100,000 to $150,000. And that's like, that's normal right now. Like, wow. My roommate, somebody gave her a car from our church, like just flat out handed her keys to their only car. And it's like a basic, like a very new car. Like, somebody else gave away an entire podcast system, just handed it over to another creative that needed it, thousands of dollars worth of stuff. Like, it's things like that. That's just, yeah, it's just happening. You know, it feels like, the book of Acts in that sense. Like it is.
I was about to say that.
Yeah. That's what it feels like. And, but there's not been like this preaching initiative where this is like the sermon series that we're like going after, you know, like every week we just are, I know so many people say this, and it's really our heart and what we mean, like authentic, you know, like every week we just want his presence. We just want him. And like we always say, we don't make room for him. We give him the whole room every Sunday. And he comes, and people are getting filled with the Spirit and gifts of the Spirit just being given out. Nobody's laying hands on them, like just beautiful encounters, you know. Anyway, so I can literally go on, and I'm probably rambling because I'm still trying to understand like what is happening. Like it feels very significant, and I feel extremely honored, honestly, to get to be a part of it. Very humbled to get to just be in it. So I mean, that's what's happening on a church level. And I mean, but the creative community, Axel, it is what we call a housed vision of Mercy Culture. And what a housed vision is like a ministry that's birthed out of Mercy Culture that doesn't exist just for Mercy Culture. Like it's open to churches, creatives all over the world. But we have a presence of creatives from all over the DFW region. So every time we get together, I mean, probably 10 to 15 different churches represented in the room, and somewhere, depending on the week, 100 to 200 people in the space together. And there's been a real focus recently. Or I'll say this past month when we met, I've just personally been feeling a shift in what we're supposed to be doing with our time when we gather. And just feel the Lord bringing me back to the genesis of the calling that I felt into the space. And the genesis of that calling was really intercession for people who are in the arts and entertainment industry. That's where the call into the creative world came from for me. Mm-hmm. Was a burden for the Britney Spears, the Lindsay Lohan, Lady Gaga, the 50 Cent, the Eminem. And so it's really cool kind of seeing the full circle in this season where the Lord's bringing us back, our entire creative community. On our last gathering last Friday night, we were just crying out to the Lord for Billie Eilish, and just praying over the local venues that are reopening in our city right now. And we met these people who came to be a part of the night that they have a recording studio in one of the biggest hospitals in the city. And they literally just bring in little kids who are on their deathbed to record songs and believing that they will get healed while they work with them. And I've seen just crazy things happen. So we brought them in and just prayed for them. Wow. And prophesied over them. And so there's just like, I don't know how to answer your question, Vince. I'm just rambling. I'm just talking, saying hey, stuff, man.
Yeah. Let me help. So Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
I can tell that you're still processing it. I can tell. And like for anybody that doesn't get to watch this, like there's evident humility and honor on your face as you're talking about this. Like as you're just like processing this. It's so evident. Like it's not like
Yeah.
anything like Jasmine's trying to like put anything out there. Oh my goodness, like this is God. Yeah, I want that like just to be pretty clear here because I don't know if anybody's gonna watch this. Yeah, I'll let kind of Ryan take it away, but
Yeah, I second that. I mean, I can feel God tangibly just talking about this. So I want to take you back to the church because I think that's where this goes, right? The church housed vision of Axel and the creatives, the city. That's kind of the spheres of influence and how it grows out. Sean Foy, I don't know if you got to see this. He posted an article with two major mega church leaders, both in the article, basically saying they can't believe the church's response to COVID, just follow the government, follow what they're saying. And then one of them, but the part that really got me, because I know people have different opinions on that, and I know this the specific one that was the main person in the article, shut his church down for, indefinite. Well, it was at least until 2020, Easter of 2021, a year ago, he made that decision. And I get that. And so I think every pastor's got to make their own decision. The other one, though, really hit me because his statement was something along the lines of the only reason these churches are fighting like that is because they think worship's their only role or something along those lines. And he's like, here we have five things that we focus on. So if we lose one, we've got the other four. And I get the heart of what he's saying. In that, and this isn't about, I don't want to focus too much on like, oh, how wrong he is, but am I understanding you right that, like, and maybe you can speak to this? It sounds to me, and from what I know about Landon and what I've, I watch Mercy Culture every week, and go to my church, and like, and then watch my daughter watches Mercy Culture Kids, and she's always like, Culture Kids, Culture Kids. Although we got to bring back Larry, that was another piece of feedback. I would buy a Larry doll. I'm sure you guys don't have the licensing for that, but like I would buy one for my daughter because she loved Larry, and then he just disappears in the second season,
Yes,
and we got to
so
deal with that.
funny. I'll make sure I get the
Anyways,
note to the editors. I got you.
yeah. Anyways, so there's that. But it sounds to me like, and from what I understand, that the centrality of worship and the focus on worship, not doing church for the sake of church, because I know there has been that. There has been the pastors that the reason they're taking the stand is because they need offerings. Or they all their identity is wrapped up in that meeting, and they're not, if they're not preaching, they're not okay. Like that exists. Put that aside. But like you guys, the idea of we don't just like turn over part of the room to you. Like we're giving the whole thing. Like you take the whole thing. If you want to do whatever you want to do, we'll get out of the way. That idea is often talked about, and people will say that that's their commitment, but then it's not followed. And you see that a lot where leaders will kind of move on, and God's like, "But I'm here. Like, what are you doing? Why are you going over there?" Am I right? And that's if you could nail down like how did you guys get here? Like, how are you at this place where this, if you, I know you're still processing, but if you could put some language, because there are leaders, either emerging leaders or future leaders or current leaders of the body that listen to this and that are hearing this, and they're hearing everything you're talking about, the worship, they're hearing the generosity, the Book of Acts, like the things that are happening, the church quadrupling. I mean, this is New Testament Christianity happening, and they're saying, okay, I want that. What would you get that down to?
Okay, a couple things come to mind as you're asking that. So the vision of mercy culture, which I don't know, for years, I did not grow up hearing churches have a clear vision. And so it's been a really unique experience to be a part of a church that has a very clear vision. And like we talk about it, like it would make you sick how much you will hear it, but there's a reason for it. Because if you don't know the vision, you'll build the wrong thing. And our vision is to take people from corporate encounters with God to daily personal encounters with God. Meaning, for us, the room being filled with people is not actually the end goal. That's not the end goal. It's just a starting point. Like the end goal, the only way that we actually know that we're winning, that we're accomplishing the vision, is if more people are having daily personal encounters with God. So like that's our win, is everybody in that room having daily personal encounters with God. So much so that when we do our membership for Mercy Culture, is something that we call connect with God assessment. And basically we've created an assessment that helps people figure out how they best connect with God. And when they take that assessment, they get the results, and like that is, and then they meet with people one-on-one basically, and people prophesy, pray over them, and help talk to them practically about how to implement that connecting with God into their personal life, and reminding them that this is the vision of the church, you know? And so like that's our goal. So first things first, like that's what we're trying to accomplish. Second bullet, whatever number two is.
Bullet.
The other thing that comes to mind is that, like what I said before and what you were saying, that we want to give him the whole room. We're all our leaders, the leaders that are being raised up in our church. Like, our heart is not that we just raise up pastors or people that know how to transition church services and do hosting transitions out of announcements. And we're not raising up leaders for that. Like, our heart is to raise up spiritual leaders, leaders that actually know the Lord and know how to help steward and host his presence well. Every Sunday morning, for the most part, on most Sundays, you're going to see all of the different elements in a Sunday morning. You're going to see announcement videos. You're going to see worship. Like, you're going to see all these pieces that you typically see in a service. But every ministry in our church, including the people who are making announcements, including the production team, including, there's not one ministry that has a different vision than the vision that I just said, or that has a different vision than like that we want to give him the whole room. So like everybody who's involved, the production, I've never seen a more like spirit filled, spirit led, like sensitive to the Holy Spirit production team in my life. So there's camera guys that are doing, and then you'll just like, we're literally hearing stories of people saying they heard the voice of God tell them to turn to the left. And they turn to the left, and like some crazy light glare happens, and then somebody gets smacked in the spirit, and they catch it. Like those types of
what
stories. And so like, we're, the heart is that everybody is being trained as spiritual leaders, not just the people with a microphone. And so then it makes every element of what's happening in the room holy and sacred and set apart, versus like, hey, when we move into this part, the spirit leaves because we're just all doing that part. Like every part of what we're doing, we want it all to, it's all, he can have all of it. That doesn't mean like giving him the whole room doesn't just mean you never made it to announcements and worship just happened the whole time. I think that's a common misunderstanding of what that phrase can mean. So people think, oh, if your church service didn't just go crazy and like you never made it to a sermon, then you know God came, or you know that you were in revival, like, or that every part of the service, everything that we offered him, he was in it and he was abiding in it and he was communing with every person that was involved in making it happen. Like, that is, that's the heart, that's the goal, you know. That our worship team, like, that they are operating like that, you know, that nobody is thinking of, we got to finish this song right now. And it's so fun because that's our entire team's heart. If one person veers off and starts operating like that, literally, I mean, there's been moments where the MD will literally say, this song's not done. or the band will keep playing because they know there's still oil there. And the worship leader almost left it. Like, I mean, that happened to me a couple weeks ago, to be honest. I almost left in an oily spot, like in worship, and the band didn't let me. Like, I literally tried to flip to the next part of the song and they were all like, nope. Like, you know, and like, I love it. That's like, that's the way it should be, you know? Yeah. And wow. So there's that element of it. And then the last thing that I'll say in that, as far as that question that you asked, Ryan, is the culture. So for us, there's four things that make up our culture. It's our vision, it's our values, it's our unique characteristics, and our leadership standards. And so, like, all four of those things, literally every week, every meeting you're going into, no matter where you are in the church, in team serving, you're going to hear the one of those for the week, every day, every week. We really believe in healthy culture. And I believe that the culture that the Holy Spirit has given us to fight for is the only thing that's like keeping us, if that makes sense. So like honestly, so one of the unique characteristics is that we don't, it's a presence-driven church, that we don't build our church around a person. The way that this looks is that Pastor Landon didn't preach. He was out of the pulpit for 7 weeks in a row just now. And that's normal. I don't lead worship. I lead worship 1 to 2 times a month. Like everybody who serves is required that they take off 1 week to rest, that they don't serve at all. They don't have to come to church if they don't want to, they don't have to do anything, but they're not allowed. There's at least 1 week where they're not allowed to serve anywhere. Because we refuse to build any part of this ministry around a person. If the church cannot live without Pastor Landon and Pastor Heather being in the building, we failed. We built it around a man. If it cannot live without me having a mic in my hand as a worship leader, I failed as a leader. I did not build a team that was built around the Holy Spirit. Like that type of thing in our culture, like that's just one of them. But like that type of thing in our culture, like that's saving us. Like so there's a lot of people that, in my opinion, like that we fight for, like being spirit led in what we're doing and just doing everything we can to make the Sunday morning experience good. But everybody throughout the week hates being a part of the organization and everybody's a jerk and nobody likes each other and everybody's tired and burnt out and jacked up and gossiping about each other. And then it becomes a container for the glory that has holes in it. And it's like, it can't contain because there's people that are broken and jacked up and hate it, you know, like, and so there's only so far something like that can go. And so like, we feel, I mean, we were talking about it this morning. We had our all day staff meeting today. And I mean, we just feel the fear of the Lord on the culture that he's given us. Because what we did, we didn't just come up with a bunch of cool cultural things. When we were planning the church, we asked the Lord, what kind of church do you want to be a part of? What kind of church do you want to be in every week, all day, every day? Like, what is it that you want that would make you stay here and abide? And like, what type of culture have you always just wanted to be in a church like this? Like, what is your desire? And those are the things that he began to speak to us and show us. And that became like the culture of mercy culture. But if you ask any leaders in our in this church or serve team members, like that is the first thing that you will probably hear outside of the vision of corporate encounters, the daily personal encounters with God, and those daily personal encounters being our lifeline. The next thing you'll hear is culture and the importance of like one of the cultural values is trust. And it's my favorite one. And it basically the tagline of it is lean into awkward. And the idea is that it's Matthew 18 is that if you feel like there is space between you and someone, there's trust that's been compromised because of something. Like our value is that we've committed to leaning forward into awkward, no matter what it is, so that we can reestablish trust, because we can't do this together if there's no trust. And so you have people all the time, all throughout the week, that are just like, hey, I got to lean into awkward. When you said this, it really hurt my feelings. I just had to lean into awkward with Pastor Landon this morning about something he said. Like, but
is that
like
literally what you guys say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like the idea is that if anybody in the organization, if you will, is if it doesn't apply to everybody, it doesn't work. So if I can't lean into Pastor Landon, lean into awkward with Pastor Landon, it doesn't work. Like if he has to be held to the values as well as me as an executive pastor, as well as the directors of the teams and the team leads, if they can't lean into awkward with me and tell me if I hurt their feelings, or if I'm telling them to do something and they can't, another one of our values, downshift to communicate clearly and make me have to slow down so that we communicate and get on the same page. Like if they can't do that with me, what we're building is not healthy. We might as well stop now. Anyways, I'm those are some of the things that for me, I feel like it's a part of what's happening, the container of what's happening, you know? But honestly, y'all, every week, like we're in a position right now. We'll be 2 years old in April, April 16th or the second Sunday in April, we'll be 2 years old. And like, there's about a total of about 3,000 people that are coming to our church regularly, less than 2 years old. And like to most places, that is like really cool. You're trying to get on Relevant or whatever the cool magazine is to be the fast people trying, you know, like for us authentically, like I feel the fear of the Lord. Like I know that that this is the type of spot, as well as so many spots that we keep hitting that are the fork in the road moments where most churches that got weird or crazy or awkward, like they didn't start like that. They started with a pure, authentic desire to please the Lord at all costs. And there's fork in the road moments that happen that determine what direction you're going to go. And they feel small, but before you know it, you end up all the way over here, super far from where you originally started because of just three fork in the road moments that take you into a different direction than what you thought you started off doing. And so we keep having fork in the road moments and finding ourselves on our faces like, Lord, we need you to show us what pleases you. Show us how to stay in you, in your presence. Like, I keep crashing planes talking about it.
Yeah, I want to emphasize something and kind of bring this full circle with what I was starting to say with the megachurch thing and then ask you something about that. I think it's really important to emphasize like what you guys are doing, and I say megachurch, I know that's kind of derogatory now, and I'm not actually using that derogatory.
Yeah.
But these some of the largest churches in the country have very similar on paper values, structures, focuses as you guys. But I just want to emphasize what you just described and keeping that as a true focus is making all the other things. Like you take a mega church and you look at like the production side, you look at how they want to impact their community and all those pieces. And typically, especially in the non-spirit-filled churches, a lot of times the focus becomes, we're going to do all those external things really well. And what I've noticed with you guys is you guys are doing the internal really well. And because of that, you're having political influence. Because of that, your food bank and like is just like insane. I don't even know the numbers off the top of my head. But I legitimately was watching, I watched your vision message, and I've heard some good vision messages in my day. I cried throughout the whole thing, and I'm like, and it wasn't just because it was moving or persuasive. It was just God was so tangibly on the whole thing. Yes. Like they would announce and move to the next thing, and I would just start crying. And I'm like, I looked at Sophia because it was just her and I up watching it. I'm like, why am I crying? Like, what is happening? And it's like, this isn't even my church. You know? It's like, it's just amazing. So I just think that's worth emphasizing is like, you guys have done that piece so well. And I think it's so easy to get caught up in the mission side of it and the external and miss the main thing. But because you guys have built the main thing so well, the external is just happening. And not that doesn't take, you know, work at times or planning or structure or systems or any of that stuff too. But it's like, you got the main thing is the main thing.
I mean, Ryan, like, and honestly, Pastor Landon and Pastor Heather, like they're phenomenal leaders, and I don't, you know, believe in idolizing people and celebrity Christian, like, you know, but like honor, you give honor where it is due. Like they are phenomenal leaders, like humble leaders that really seek the Lord and have like such a beautiful fear of the Lord in just every area of their life, honestly. And I have so much respect for them. But like everything that you're saying, everything that you just said just now, what's mind boggling about it, even for me, like, bro, I get jacked up thinking about it. Like I'm in it and I just get jacked up thinking about it. There's like executive meetings where we're talking about things. You know, when you're on an executive team, honestly, just talking sister bro and bro, new bro Vince, like when you're in an executive team in a church, you are the furthest in that you could possibly be. So like full disclosure, like the executive offices are probably some of the darkest offices in churches across America. The most gossip, the most like just hard things that happen in a lot of places. I know it's not like that in every church, but I just know there's a lot that happens behind the scenes that is hard. And I've seen some of it. I've been in some of those meetings and some of those spaces. And in this season of my life, I've never cried so much in those spaces just due to being blown away by the Lord and the health and the beauty of what God is doing. Like meetings where we're in a meeting praying and the Lord speaks to somebody on the executive team that we're supposed to give $10,000 to the church up the street and just give them a check tomorrow. You know, we don't share all those things publicly because it's not for everybody to know. But like when you're in offices where things like that are happening and the senior lead pastors are weeping and repenting because they accidentally said something that was just not honoring to somebody else in the meeting. like, you know, just things like that. You're like, what the heck? But like my whole point in saying that for what you were talking about with the Vision Sunday was that I'm learning so much from the SHOTS leadership because they are constantly asking the Lord, show us what pleases you. It's Ephesians 5:10. It's what Paul prayed. And it's just, Lord, show us what pleases you. And there are so many things that are happening right now in Mercy Culture that I've seen people strategically plot and plan, like for church growth and for influence and impact, that I've watched happen because the Lord spoke. because God actually said, start the food bank right now. We didn't have plans to start a food bank. We didn't have the capacity, we didn't think, to start a food bank. COVID started. And Pastor Landon is on a run, and the Lord speaks to him to start a food bank. In a year, fed 100 million meals, like, through our little church in Fort Worth, Texas. 100 million is what we hit in a year just now. Like, that doesn't make sense, you know? Like, and I mean, it's things like that. There's all these things that they're not coming because we put together a cool plan. And in fact, some of the church planning things that we were told at the beginning, like, not on purpose, not as rebels, but we haven't followed some of the rules that were given on how you actually see churches grow. Like, mm-hmm. we've just obeyed God and he's grown the church, you know, like he's doing the heavy lifting of it, but we broke all the rules, but not trying to be rebels, just trying to obey the Lord and trying to please him. And so we're just, it's, yeah, just blown away by what the Lord is doing.
Yeah. Can we jump back to, okay, the fork in the road thing?
Yeah.
And just, cause I think that that's the place that, both practically and spiritually I'd like to talk about. And I think that that's a place where a lot of leaders get lost, is because a lot of leaders are naturally gifted in vision and strategy and structures, those yes. sorts of things. And it's easy to replicate. I somebody could even be listening to this right now and be dreaming about a church with God and think, okay, I got to mimic,
yes,
you know, all these things. And you could have a service that looks totally different and God just as much be in it.
Yes.
You know, but it's about being able to capture what is the Lord's heart for what we're doing, our expression, and that sort of thing. I was talking to Gerald Murphy and Caleb Hanshaw. I don't think you know Caleb. He's from West Virginia, but you know Gerald Murphy. Mm-hmm. I was talking to him, and I don't even know. Oh, I think maybe it's because I was about to have this podcast. For some reason, Mercy Culture came up, and I was just talking about Landon. I said, I don't know of another leader other than maybe David Hogan that I've seen be so aggressive with going after God, mm-hmm. like for direction.
Yes.
Whereas like David Hogan would get something in his heart and he's like, we're going to fast and pray until God does it.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I've seen the same thing with Landon, and it's not just like, hey, we're going to fast and pray and get this going, and then we'll just run from there. It's like
every step,
at least from the outside, you know, this yeah. sounds like you're confirming this, at least yes. from the outside, what I'm witnessing is it's every step of the way. Again,
yes.
at those forks in the road, even it wouldn't even just be the forks in the road. There's such sensitivity that it's, oh, I said something that was dishonoring to that mm-hmm. person. So, like, can you just speak to what does that look like practically? What do those fork in the road moments look like? Does it look like as a staff getting on your face? What does it look like?
Yes. so many thoughts, so many things come to mind in that. And I don't want to make it seem like there are these epic, huge moments that, like, you only get, like, one a year or something, and then you decide, and then you make it, like, like, it's, like, there's a lot of them, like, but you can feel them, like, this morning, today was one, like, we did this amazing event, had this awesome weekend, Sean White was with us, and crazy things happened this weekend, one of our pastors was running for mayor of Fort Worth, and did this awesome event, and there was a message that was sent to our executive team that hurt my feelings. It was just a little intense, and it was lacking some information that happened behind the scenes, and I could have, it was a fork in the road moment for me as an executive leader. So like, as one of the pastors in the church, one of the things that I've seen do a work in churches is when there's a yes man culture that's created around in leadership. And, and I get to see every day how that happens. Like, I get to see every single day how churches got to it. Like, I feel the moments
through those moments where yes. it's like, I could say something right now, yes. or I could just shut up and go
Absolutely.
With it, be offended.
It literally happens in seconds in conversations. Either you just don't say anything, or you have a relationship, and like, you lean into the awkward things and you say the hard things, and you love one another and you repent and you know, like, that is the difference. And like, if we allow a yes man culture to get in, like, we're kaput, like done, you know. But like, today, like, literally going into meet with him, like, I had a decision to make. I can either act like everything was great from that and just talk about all the practical things that we have to get through, because there's so many things that we need to talk about today, or I can come in humble and low and honest and authentic. One of our values is authenticity, is that we don't do fake. So I can come in that value and lean in awkward, or act like nothing happened and just keep it moving and just get it done, you know. And I went in there and I said, hey, I needed to lean into awkward. I got downshift. I said, I got like all the values on deck for today. I got a lot of things that we need to talk about, you know? And we laughed together and I was like, all right, you know? And him and Pastor Heather were both there. And I just, I told them what was on my heart. And my senior lead pastor looked at me and he said, tears in his eyes, he says, I am so sorry that I hurt you. He said, I didn't mean that at all. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry for communicating like that. I'm still growing in the way that I communicate in that type of scenario of what was happening. He's like, I'm still learning. Please forgive me. Will you forgive me? And I said, I forgive you. Thank you so much. And I said, can we talk about the practicalities of how that happened and the details of it? And he said, yeah, let's talk about it. And I said, it was really awkward when you did this, when you said this, and he said that, that didn't work. And da 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 da. And we talked through the whole thing and it was great. But unfortunately, like, I know that that's not a lot of I know that's not a lot of people's reality in that space. That conversation, I've seen that conversation look very different with a senior lead pastor, or I've seen executive pastors or people in that type of leadership role not even be able to or feel like they're allowed to come to that space. And those are the types of things that we're fighting for. In the midst of the racial tension and all of that. I mean, a few weeks ago, Pastor Landon and Pastor Heather, they have a very clear, strong assignment. They don't got no patience for Jezebel and no patience for religion. Like, just none of it, just not having it, you know? Like, and so like, our church is kind of like, if you're going to be part of mercy culture, you have to know, like, we will go in, like, in those two areas, we will go in. And if you're not wanting to go in, then there are some other churches that have different assignments that will be great, you know? And so like, it was interesting in the racial tension in the last season. I know my pastor's assignment. I know the assignment of our house, but there were some things that happened that were hard, that were a little difficult for several different reasons in how everything was happening. And so it required lean into awkwards. It required me having to say, hey, when you said that, that was really hard. Or, hey, thank you for saying that like that. This is what that did for me when you said that. And just having dialogue about it. And even in all the lean into awkwards that we had through that season, like, I still knew there were some things that they were saying that I disagree with. I was like, I don't know if I agree with that or how that moment was approached. But like, you don't need to agree to be in unity. Like, the two, you don't have to agree with everything to be in unity with someone. And so there was unity that was fought for, but like, some things that I just didn't agree with. And because there's relationship, you can talk about those things and articulate those things. And I remember one day a few weeks ago, me and Pastor Heather were talking and she started bawling and she said, Jasmine, I just want you to know, our relationship is not up for debate. She said, if this space ever costs us our relationship, like, I won't let it happen. We will not allow relationship to be compromised for the sake of ministry. And I sat there and bawled like a baby, like, straight up like a little child, just bawling like a baby, you know? And it allowed us to connect hearts on a deeper level about a topic that most people will just never talk about, that's hard. And like, literally, we're able to talk about two very hard things, our different perspectives about this very hard topic. And finally, we're able to find, like, okay, this is what it looks like. This is the agreement. This is the unity that we needed. But it required a lot of hard conversations and dialogue and moments together. Anyway, those I'm giving those examples. That example may feel like it's a far off, but like those are fork in the roads. Like our other fork in the roads are like when people say you guys have to go to three services immediately, like now you have to do it because you're running out of room and you're running out of stuff and you have to like shift. And we can either say you're right, we freaking out, let's do it right now, whatever we have to do, let's switch it, da 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 da, or we all said we won't make a decision until we pray. We must hear the Lord. And it literally put us in a bind because we waited weeks like for the Lord to speak to us. And we refused to move as an executive team. And the elders operate like this too. It's unity or nothing. So if we're not all in unity, we don't move. We don't do it. But it means that all of us have to pray and all of us have to hear the Lord and actually have to seek him. So there's 40-day, 21, all kinds of fasts that are always happening and just us leaning in together. But like, we can't afford, we didn't get to this place with good strategy and good ideas and just grinding, you know. The Lord has led us here. We got that building like because there was a 40-day fast and a shofar and prayer walks around, like, you know, there's all kinds of stuff in these stories that happen. And so it's like, why would we stop now? Why if we want to continue with him in him, why all of a sudden would we flip to, okay, now how do we figure this out? How do we strategically make this work now? And that's the temptation every week in our executive meeting. Like Pastor Lennon got up at the top of the year and prophesied the word of the year that it was the year of the supernatural and that we were going to experience supernatural growth. The week that he preached the supernatural numerical growth message, like it was a word that the Lord gave him about what was coming. And he delivered that word. And that day we had the largest attendance in the history of our church. And like 30 kids got turned down, like the day that he preached it. Like it wasn't even after he preached it. So he's preaching it and we're all like, what's happening? Like, where did all these people come from? You know, while he's preaching it. And so we could either like, and honestly, in my flesh, because my number one strength is strategic and the strength finders. Like, so I'm a strategist. Like, I love you too. Like, I love just, how do we do this? How do we figure it out? And it's been one of the most dying to self experiences that I've ever had in my life. Because I can't figure it out. I can't like, it doesn't work. You know, like, I'm like, how do we, and I'm like, okay, we literally can't figure it out. Like, it's so much bigger than us. And we just need God to do it, like in all of the areas. And I know that sounds super ambiguous and like kind of abstract, but like it is honest. What is like what it is like? We're here right now. We're going to a third service starting on Easter because the Lord spoke to us. That's why we went into two services, is because the Lord spoke to us. And here we are again, about to go into three services and none of us can practically figure out what the heck is about to happen. We're like, how do we do this? Like, I don't know how I'm going to sing for three services. I don't know. Pastor Lynn's going to, we don't know what we're doing, but the Lord said to do it. And so we're just doing it and trusting that he'll give a dream. Somebody will have an encounter. He'll speak like, and cause that's how everything has been built up until this point. And so we just keep showing up saying, Lord, show us what pleases you. Teach us the way, you know.
Well, that does it for part one of our conversation with Jasmine Tate. Be on the lookout for part two on April 12th. That's a week from the launch date of episode 24 of this first part. So episode 25, which will be part two of the conversation with Jasmine Tate, will launch on April 12th. So be on the lookout for that. Once again, please share this with your friends, your family, your on all your social media, like, subscribe, do all the things that that you do in social media world. That'll help us out a lot and help grow this podcast. And then if this podcast or ministry has really touched you in any way, inspired you, stirred you to hunger, would you please consider giving a one-time or monthly gift to help us continue to do what we're doing and reach more people? If you'd like to do that, you can go to firemovement.com/support. But as for today, this has been the Fire Podcast.